The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Monday, August 23rd. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. To recap the weekend, get you the latest waiver wire ads. Aaron Nola and Christian Yelich might be back, and much more. First and foremost, hope everybody is doing all right. This tropical storm that hit the Northeast is it's pretty bad. We're recording around midnight, and I just got my power back about an hour ago. So tweeted out, Christmas miracle. Thankfully, we're here. We're all together. Chris, Scott, me, Frank. What's up, Chris? How you doing? How was the weekend?
It was good. I went to a concert on Saturday, saw my favorite band, Wilco. Saw a little bit of Sleater-Kinney as well, but unfortunately the tropical storm kind of wrecked that. They had to stop the concert for like an hour because of lightning and all that. But I got to say, watching a concert in the rain when everybody's just decided that we're okay getting soaked, that was kind of a really good time. Like, I'm hoping I don't get sick as a result of it, you know, running around and just a perpetual downpour for like 3.5 hours. But I gotta say, I wouldn't want it at every concert, but I had a good time.
I saw a video of you. Fun. It might have been on Facebook of you just like running around in the rain. It actually looked pretty fun. So
yeah, it was a good little time. Jealous. You know, it's not something you do often as an adult, play in the rain, but I have fond memories of running around in the rain as a younger person.
How you doing, Scott? Did you run around in the rain this weekend?
No, I didn't. I did not run around in the rain. There wasn't a lot of rain here, actually. There usually is, but
we got all of it.
Yeah, you got all of it. You took it. It got dragged up there. Yeah. No, didn't. I watched a lot of Rick and Morty. I'm becoming pretty obsessed with that show, I think. It's lived up to, it's one of those shows that, you know, people talk about on social media all the time, and you're like, gosh, just get over it already. It's a TV show. And then you watch it and you're like, oh, okay, I get it now.
For some reason, have you gotten to Tiny Rick?
Yes.
Tiny Rick.
I'm not through season two yet, so I'm still pretty early on. But
his song about being stuck in a child version of his body, it's very, very catchy. Very catchy tune.
Chris, I'm not going to put you on the spot and force you to do anything you don't want to do, but I feel like you can probably do a really good impression of either Rick or Morty. You don't have to do it, but if you decide you want to break it out at any point in this podcast, feel free to do so.
Okay. Oh, geez, Rick. I don't know about this.
Morty, you just got to listen to me, Morty. Just listen to your grandpa, Rick.
Very nice. See, you guys are the best.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, let's talk about stuff that happened this weekend, and we will start with, who do we want to start with? Let's go with Chris.
I feel like you usually start with me for this. You always, like, do a little, like, show of, like, oh, I don't know who it's going to be, and it's always me, which is fine.
All right.
It's just something I've noticed. Tristan McKenzie. I've always been a big Tristan McKenzie fan. I think he's a very talented pitcher, and we're really seeing that lately. You know, he had a stretch last season where he looked really good, but especially over the last two starts, especially that he's been really, really great. The velocity's been there. Eight strikeouts in seven innings, one earned run, two hits this time out. He had the eight shutout, 11 strikeout game. And this is four quality starts in a row for Tristan McKenzie, who, you know, got off to a really tough start this season. And, you know, I think that fueled a lot more concerns about, you know, whether he was suited to be a starter long term. But the fact that he's pitching into August, sustaining his velocity, something he couldn't do last year, and pitching better is a really good sign.
Yeah, and the fact that the velocity has been up recently during this stretch as well. He's actually made eight starts since returning to the majors, and in that stretch, 3.49 ERA, just a 0.78 whip, 48 strikeouts to just eight walks over 49 innings pitched. So that's really the key. Yeah. The fact that the...
Because he was like a walk per inning before he got sent down. I mean, it was a disaster. So, yeah, I mean, you see how much... How much just little adjustments in the minors can make? Because now Tristan McKenzie, if four great starts in a row, I mean.
Turns out, like, having a consistent role can also help. Because he was, they used him really weird early on in the season. And you have to think that, you know, didn't help at the very least.
Yeah, 100%. Control much better for McKenzie. He's got a 13% swinging strike rate during this last eight start stretch. And let's rank. I would say these are the best waiver wire starting pitchers available at this point that are rostered in less than 80% of CBS leagues. I'll check to see how rostered Josiah Gray is, but he should probably be in this mix as well. But all of these pitchers pitched pretty well over the weekend. McKenzie, Vladimir Gutierrez, another strong start on Sunday, seven innings, one run, eight strikeouts against the Miami Marlins. Obviously, pretty strong matchup there. He has six straight quality starts now. Vladimir Gutierrez does. Tuki Toussaint at the Orioles, 5 1/3, one run, five strikeouts. He was fine. He's got a 3.69 ERA in seven starts since being recalled. And then Cal Quantrill on Sunday Night Baseball, another really, really strong performance. Seven shutout, two hits, two walks, nine strikeouts. He's got a 1.50 ERA over his last eight starts. Scott, how would you rank that group? McKenzie, Gutierrez, Toussaint, Cal Quantrill.
I would rank them McKenzie and Toussaint. Clearly one and two, I think. I have major questions about how good Gutierrez actually is, as we've talked about before, and yet he just turned in his sixth straight quality start on Sunday. So, you know, he was picked up for the two-start week. I can imagine he'll be kept. I'm just trying to look ahead because I think, you know, we're running out of time here, and I think the Reds have run out of season, I should say, and I think the Reds have among the best matchups of any team going forward. They see they face the Pirates three times in September, the Cubs, the Nationals, the Tigers. Yeah, it looks like a pretty good road ahead for the Reds. So because of that, I'm going to put Gutierrez ahead of Quantrill, who I'm also not totally sold on. But I wouldn't have a problem with anybody picking up any of these guys at this point. I just think skills-wise, McKenzie and Toussaint stand out the most.
Gutierrez, by the way, is at the Marlins this upcoming week. He's 78% rostered, so more so in shallower leagues, 10%, 10-team leagues, head-to-head points leagues. Obviously, you might see Gutierrez available. Josiah Gray, by the way, is 76% rostered. Where would he rank among this group, Scott? Is he ahead of Tristan McKenzie?
No, I can't put him ahead of Tristan McKenzie after the way the last three combined hits, 19 combined strikeouts, the last two starts for McKenzie. So, no, Gray would be second. He would be between McKenzie and Toussaint for me.
Chris, how would you rank this group?
Exactly the same way.
Cool. Alrighty. So McKenzie and Josiah Gray up at the top. Oh my goodness gracious for you, Scotty.
So this is a profile I hate, but kind of hard to ignore after the week he had. Nicky Lopez, Little Nicky, which I can only assume is one of your favorite movies, Frank.
Favorite.
We talked about it beforehand, so I actually knew that. But yeah, Nicky Lopez is up to, let me see if I can find it. Is it eight steals in his last seven games? Is that right, Frank?
Yeah. 11 hits, eight steals over his last seven games.
Eight steals in his last seven games. So, I mean, we know the Royals produce some big base stealers. They like to run, and he's fitting the mold. Now, we saw him get called up with moderate hype, I would say, in 2019, and he just didn't hit at all. It was kind of a Nick Madrigal situation because he has zero power, basically, but makes a lot of contact, can run a bit. And so this is the kind of player we dreamed he would be when he first got called up 2 years ago. Since mid-July, he's batting about .320 with a .375 BABIP. So, you know, it's not like he may be having some luck, but not crazy amount of luck. And he's stealing a bunch. He's 18 for 18 now this season. So if you need a steal specialist, a batting average specialist, from an up-the-middle guy, I think he's eligible at both second and short, I want to say.
Yep, he is.
Nicky Lopez.
He was 1-6 on stolen base attempts in his first two seasons combined.
And now 18 for 18.
And I will say that the Nick Madrigal comparison is probably a little unfair. Nicky Lopez has 10 home runs in 88 games at AAA. I'm not sure Nick Madrigal has that many home runs in a game going back to high school.
Oh, so you're saying it was unfair to Nicky, not unfair to... Okay, I was thinking, oh, Madrigal...
The power, let me see.
Because Madrigal was a much more highly touted prospect.
Sorry, Nick Madrigal does have 14 career home runs going back to high school.
Interesting.
So...
I would have taken the under on 10, honestly, for Nick Madrigal. Yeah, it's a nice stretch that we're on here for Nicky Lopez, and specifically for this upcoming week, the Royals play 7 games. So give you some volume there. If you do need some speed, he is someone that you can look at. For me, I'm going to go with Tyler Naquin. He is hot again. 7 hits, including 3 home runs this weekend, and including a double dong on Sunday. 53% rostered is Tyler Naquin. They play 6 games this upcoming week. The Cincinnati Reds do. They do have 2 lefties on the schedule, so that doesn't bode well for Naquin, but he is playing consistently as long as Jesse Winker is on the IL. And in the month of August, strikeout rate is way down for Tyler Naquin, below 16%, with a near 34% line drive rate. So he's putting the ball in play, he's lifting the ball, and obviously in Cincinnati, that's going to mean very good things. Chris, how would you rank this group of waiver wire outfielders from the weekend? Tyler Naquin, Miles Straw now in 21 games with Cleveland, .318 batting average, 4 steals, 18 runs scored in 21 games. Brandon Nimmo, over his last 15 games, batting .295, 2 homers, 1 steal. Andrew Benintendi is hot again as well, 14 hits over his last 8 games. And Odubel Herrera went 4-for-5 on Sunday. He has a home run in back-to-back games. Naquin, Straw, Nimmo, Benintendi, Herrera. How would you rank him?
Honestly, probably Straw, Nimmo, and then Benintendi or Naquin. I don't feel super strong about it. They're, you know, Naquin has more pop. Benintendi has more potential to steal some bases, but I'm not particularly enthused about either of them.
What do you think of this group, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, did you point out Naquin's full numbers in August?
No, just the strikeout rate and the line drive rate.
He's having a bananas month here. He's batting like around .400 for the month with the 2 home runs today, and he is at...
But like we learned our lesson here, right?
Or maybe we learned the wrong lesson. Because
I think we probably learned the right lesson.
He's up to 7 home runs now in August, batting nearly .400. Yeah. And as I pointed out for Vladimir Gutierrez, the Reds matchups the final month are extremely favorable. I don't know. I don't know what to make of Tyler Naquin, to be honest. He's had 2 amazing months and not much in between, but he seems to have the center field job locked up and really good matchups ahead. And as hot as he's been all season. So I don't know. I might put him, I could see going Straw ahead of him if you need the steals, but otherwise I might go Naquin number 1 here of this group.
All right. Again, that group includes Naquin, Miles Straw, Brandon Nimmo, Andrew Benintendi, and Odubel Herrera. Those guys are hot right now from the weekend. I did want to point out, oh my goodness gracious, just missed here, but wanted to talk about him at the top. Chris Sale, he was fine against the Texas Rangers. 5 shutout, 5 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. He only had 7 swinging strikes on 71 pitches. His fastball velocity, we spoke about it after the first start. It was right around 93 miles per hour in that first start, just over 93, which is where he was at before he got hurt back in 2019. In this start, the fastball velocity down even more, 92.3 miles per hour on average. Are you guys worried about Chris Sale? Would you start him against the Minnesota Twins this week?
I'm not worried at all.
Yeah.
Definitely start him. I don't think velocity is a big deal with him. It's fluctuated a lot over the course of his career. And
he's someone who's talked about, you know, not going 100% all the time. I did want to see, he didn't throw his slider much in the first start. I wanted to see what the usage was this time around. And he's at 21% slider usage so far through two starts, which is really low for him. Obviously, he, you know, was starting to use his slider as his primary pitch the last like three or four seasons. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. But no, I don't think there's anything to be concerned about Chris Sales.
All right.
As long as he's healthy.
Keep him in your lineup up against the Minnesota Twins this week, this upcoming week. News and notes from the weekend. These players went to the IL. Anthony DeSclafani, right ankle inflammation. Evan Longoria and Nelson Cruz both went to the COVID IL. They didn't really tell us if those guys tested positive or not, so you got to play the situation by ear for both Longoria and Nelson Cruz. Diego Castillo with right shoulder inflammation. Scott, the next Mariners save will go to?
Paul Sewald. Unless it goes to Drew Steckenrider. I think that Diego Castillo was pretty clearly third in that conversation anyway.
Yeah.
But no, I think Paul Sewald, he's only rostered in about a third of CBS Sports leagues, and he's probably the most under-rostered reliever right now. I think if anybody's going to claim the job outright, it'll be him. And even if only he gets half the saves, he'll be worth using in most leagues.
Willie Peralta went to the IL with a blister. Joe Barlow went to the IL with a blister as well and looked like he was the closer for the Rangers. Scott, the next save for Texas will go to blank and doesn't matter.
Yes, Spencer Patton, because he had dropped back to the setup role when Barlow overtook him.
Yep. And I picked him up in a 15-team roto league for dirt cheap, but man, I am desperate for saves. So it's probably Spencer Patton. I don't think he's very good. And Tyrone Taylor went to the IL with a right oblique injury. Congratulations, Miguel Cabrera hit his 500th career home run on Sunday. He is the 28th player in MLB history to do so. It's been an awesome career. You know, Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols are really the two that I look at as like generational talents from like the past two decades, basically, in terms of just hitting talent. So awesome to see that accomplishment.
Oh, yeah, just two of the best right-handed hitters ever. It's weird that I'm at the point now where like Miguel Cabrera's hit 500 home runs. He's close to the end of his career. And like I was 15 when he made his debut, you know, obviously being a Marlins fan. Yeah, it's been ages you. Makes you feel a little old.
I was in college.
But he's unbelievable player.
Remember the Miguel Cabrera hype distinctly. Yeah.
Drafted, signed as a shortstop, played shortstop in the minors.
I mean,
who wasn't? Go back and watch some videos of him as a rookie. Dude was svelte.
I actually saw the video that you posted earlier too. Yeah. He was, it's always interesting to see like
it gets brushed back by Roger Clemens in game four of the World Series. Four pitches later, hits an opposite field home run.
All right. You know,
the Marlins won that game.
All right. Yeah, we can move on.
Remember that one. Gonzalez hit a walk-off home run.
Yep.
They would later go on to win the series.
Okay.
World Series.
Okay.
In Yankee Stadium.
You done? Chris? Nope. All right. Good. Kenta Maeda left Saturday's start with forearm tightness, and he is slated to undergo additional tests. This obviously has the potential to be pretty bad for Kenta Maeda, and there's a chance that he's shut down for the rest of the season. As far as I saw, he was not placed on the IL yet, but doesn't sound good. Mike Trout worked out on the field prior to Friday's game and indicated that he is feeling good. He also admitted to experiencing some soreness earlier in the week, but it appears to have subsided. So we're waiting for Mike Trout to come back from that calf strain, which he's been out since probably May, right? It's been a super long time, so...
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to get anything else from Mike Trout. Same thing with Clayton Kershaw. He threw from 120 feet on Saturday and may get back on the mound this week. Astros GM James Click said that Alex Bregman will appear in another rehab game on Monday. Very weird situation because on Thursday, Dusty Baker said they had no update on Alex Bregman and when he's going to play. And then on Friday, they're just like, hey, he's going to play in rehab. So... I don't know. I hope he's all right, and I hope he's back soon. But he did hit a home run at Triple A.
And I think John Heyman jumped in there and said he might be activated Sunday or Monday. So we were all over the place with Bregman this weekend. But
it's been a weird recovery.
I do think he's trending toward being activated this week in deeper leagues. I would plan on starting Bregman.
Nice. Let's do it. Kyle Tucker is also trending towards a midweek return. He's currently on the COVID IL. Chris Paddock threw 25 pitches in an intensive bullpen session on Friday. Jose Urquidy threw a bullpen session on Sunday. Aaron Civale made a rehab start at AA on Sunday. Ian Anderson will make one more rehab start at AAA before likely rejoining the Atlanta starting rotation. Pablo Lopez made a rehab start this weekend. He went three no-hit innings with three strikeouts. Scott, how would you rank the IL stashes in terms of starting pitchers? Paddock, Urquidy, Civale, Ian Anderson, Pablo Lopez. I'll throw Corey Kluber in that mix as well. I guess give me the three that you're most excited about potentially helping us down the stretch.
Well, obviously, timeline's going to factor into this as late as we are in the season.
Yeah.
And yet, having said that, Ian Anderson, I think, clearly is number one since he's about to return. I think I'm going to gamble on Lopez and Civale returning with enough time to impact you. If you need somebody sooner than that, then Jose Urquidy.
The Pirates waived Gregory Polanco. TJ Antone is expected to return on Tuesday for the Reds. He's 21% rostered. Chris, would you look to add TJ Antone anywhere?
I think in roto leagues, because of his, you know, multi-inning strikeout potential, he can have some value even if he isn't necessarily in a closer's role, which, you know, maybe he does get there.
Man, the Cincinnati Reds, by the way, gosh, they've been one of the more fun teams. The word I will use is fun to predict the season in terms of their closer role.
I would
role.
Choose a different word.
But yeah, Michael Givens got a save on Friday, and then Michael Lorenzen got two saves, one on Saturday and one on Sunday. So do you have any feel for this bullpen right now, Scott?
He was okay. So to clarify, he was bailing out Givens
on Saturday.
Yes. But Givens was brought in to pitch the eighth, which, you know, where did that come from? Givens seemed very, for over a week now, Givens seemed locked into that closer role.
Which is as long as anyone's had it for the Reds.
Yeah, pretty much. And then you know, maybe Lorenzen just got the save Sunday because Givens had worked back-to-back days. I don't know. I would still guess Givens is in the driver's seat there, but it's not as clear-cut as I thought heading into the weekend.
Nick Solak was recalled by the Texas Rangers and is expected to be their everyday second baseman for the rest of the season. He did pick up two hits on Saturday. Scott, do you have any interest in Nick Solak in deeper leagues?
Yeah, in deeper leagues, sure. I'm not optimistic he's going to come and look like the guy we saw in April. One of the few hitters who stood out in April and then disappeared after that. But, you know, he's done things before. Keep an eye on him.
Alec Bohm was optioned to AAA. He was batting .245 with a .645 OPS this season, 26% strikeout rate, a lot of ground balls. Chris, how worried are you about Alec Bohm if you have him in a dynasty league?
Well, he just turned 25 3 weeks ago. So, I mean, he's not old, but he's certainly not, you know, so young that you can just easily project him to turn things around. It's clear he's still a physically talented player, but his approach isn't good. You know, he was someone who, you know, I don't know if maybe he's been trying to get, you know, more power into games in the majors, and that's why his contact rate and strikeout rate have been so poor. He is hitting the ball surprisingly hard, 92 miles per hour average exit velocity, 50% hard hit rate, but hitting the ball into the ground a bunch, I don't know. I definitely don't feel good about him right now.
Yeah. Me neither. It's going to be interesting to see if the Phillies can get him back on track. Someone who hit for a lot of batting average in the minors. The power, a little bit skeptical because of that ground ball rate again, but he's still young, so let's see. Start or sit these players for the upcoming week. Tim Anderson has sat out two straight, and we saw this quote from Tony La Russa. If this was October, he'd be in there, but this is preventative. Scott, what do you think? Start or sit, Tim Anderson?
Probably start. I mean, if you have an awesome backup at shortstop, maybe not, but you probably don't. It's a position that thins out quickly.
Tony La Russa also said that Carlos Rodon will start Thursday, quote, if he does a couple of more things. I don't really know what that means because he'd do anything.
Sure.
But would you guys start Carlos Rodon this week?
I wouldn't start him.
All right. The Mets are hopeful that Francisco Lindor could be back on Tuesday. Would you start him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you were holding your breath for his return, if you found a pretty good alternative, it's not like he was super productive for you before getting hurt.
Eduardo Escobar was removed Sunday with right hamstring discomfort. What are we thinking there?
Probably sit if in doubt.
Yeah.
And lastly, we have Travis d'Arnaud, who was placed on the paternity list on Saturday. The Braves play on Monday and Tuesday and then are off Wednesday. Again, we spoke about the scheduling this upcoming week is pretty weird, but there's a chance we don't see Travis d'Arnaud again until Friday. So
why are teams off on Wednesday?
I don't know.
There are two teams that are off Sunday too. It's a weird week.
That's really strange.
There's got to be something weird, like some...
That never happens.
Maybe some special kind of games or something. I don't know.
Oh, is the... No. The Little League thing already happened, right?
Yeah, that was Sunday Night Baseball.
I haven't the foggiest then.
Yeah. By the way, Scott, we're going up against each other, Yankees and Braves, so should be fun.
Oh, well, both of our team's fortunes are suddenly looking much better.
It's true.
Much better.
You really hate to see it.
I actually love to see it. Thank you. I was writing the Braves off, remember? Like, just in July, I was saying, all right, they're not going to the playoffs this year. On this very podcast, I said that. How wrong I was, because now they have, some would say, an 81% chance. I don't know who exactly I'm citing here by saying that, but playoff odds, 81%.
Are we starting Travis d'Arnaud?
In a two-catcher league, probably. Yeah. Not in a one-catcher league.
Yeah, I have him in the podcast points league, and... I haven't set up my waiver wire bids yet, so I probably should do that right after this podcast.
The thing is, you may not want to pick up a second catcher is the thing. And, yeah. You know, catchers sit a lot anyway. So I could see starting him just because of that.
And it's a 3-day. Like, if he was placed on Saturday, he should be back by Tuesday at the very latest, I think.
Well, and you have to.
Paternity leave is 3 days.
Yeah, I think it's like 3 to 7 is what it can be. It can go as far as 7, but... least amount is 3 days, so he's got to be there at least until Tuesday, and then they don't play Wednesday or Thursday, so that's why it's a very weird week for the Braves overall. So
that is strange.
I would probably lean towards benching him if you could.
I think sitting him makes sense.
We had some returns this weekend. Rhys Hoskins came back on Sunday with a double dong. He's now up to 26 home runs. Javier Baez came back Sunday as well. He went 2 for 4 with 2 doubles. Kwanghyun Kim returned on Sunday and will be used out of the bullpen for the rest of the season for St. Louis. Chris Archer, old friend, 2 shutout innings with 4 strikeouts, but he left again with a tight hip. Would we have any interest in Archer if he was completely healthy?
Not that much.
Not much, yeah.
All right. Few prospect updates. Orioles 2020 first-round pick Heston Kjerstad. We have not seen him play at all yet in the minor leagues. He is close to resuming baseball activities, has not made that professional debut yet because of a prolonged battle with inflammation in his heart. Big left-handed power for Heston Kjerstad. Issues with strikeouts, so hopefully he can make it. I think that power would be able to play in Camden Yards, but obviously he's got a long road ahead, Heston Kjerstad does. Nate Pearson pitched in relief at AAA on Sunday. He allowed a solo homer in his 1 inning of work, and the Blue Jays are planning to use him as a reliever this season with the big league club. Let's get back to some hitters here. Are we doing the Dalton Varsho thing again? Back-to-back games with a home run over the weekend. Coors Field definitely helps. 34% rostered. He's got 7 road games this upcoming week. Would you prefer Dalton Varsho or Elias Diaz, who has been pretty hot for like the past 2 months? The problem is he's got 6 games this week. They're all on the road. So will not be at Coors Field.
Like, I'd take Diaz if you could guarantee me he was at home, but I'm pretty excited about Varsho, actually. I know he's only started 8 of the team's last 16 games, but if he keeps hitting like this, especially with his flexibility to play the outfield, you know, that's only going to go up, and he's not counting Sunday's game where he fell a single short of the cycle. Since the start of July, Varsho is batting .296 with a .1028 OPS.
Hmm. Yeah, and 8 of 16, like, that's not that much different than the kind of guys you're going to be starting in a 2-catcher league anyway.
Yep.
Sure.
Would you guys drop Travis d'Arnaud for Dalton Varsho in a 1-catcher league?
I think so. Yeah, they're right in the same range for me. I was making that decision with Mitch Garver, actually. Garver, Varsho, d'Arnaud. I was making that decision in several of my leagues, actually. Mm-hmm. Garver hasn't played that much, so I think he might be the back of the line for me now, of that trio.
So who would you rather have this week, Scott? Varsho or Diaz? Varsho, right?
Varsho. Diaz on the road, yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Do you have any interest in these hitters in deeper leagues? Jake Meyers is a name who, over the last 15 games for the Houston Astros, he's batting .341, three homers. He does strike out quite a bit. He's hitting the ball very hard. 92.7 mile per hour, average exit velocity. Was crushing it in the minors this year. Some power, some speed. But I do wonder if Kyle Tucker returns, what happens to the playing time for Jake Meyers? Any interest here?
I'm going to guess that he keeps it because it seems like he's the better center fielder anyway. Chaz McCormick has moved over to right to accommodate Meyers. And with Meyers hitting this well, why would they take him out? Now, he is striking out like 30% of the time, but he struck out 19% of the time in the minors. So I don't know that that's going to be just forever part of his profile. Oh, this guy strikes out too much. Yeah, I like what I've seen from him.
It was right around 20% at AAA, right around 20% at AA. So, you know, I think you could project some improvement there if he keeps playing every day. I think he's interesting.
Jake Meyers in one of my 15 team roto leagues went for $21 out of a $1,000 fab budget. So right around 2%. Again, that's a five outfielder league. He is 9% rostered on CBS. Chaz McCormick's currently dealing with a hand injury as well. So he's day to day. That could definitely help with Meyers playing time in the short term, obviously. Lane Thomas has 7 hits with 1 steal over this weekend. He's only 1% rostered. Some power, some speed in the minors. Nothing overwhelming. Any interest, Lane Thomas?
Not really.
All right. Next up, we have Andrew Velasquez, he's been like this awesome spark plug for the Yankees. They're stealing bases left and right now, which I don't really know where it's come from, but he's part of the reason. Last 7 games, he's batting .300, 1 homer, 2 steals, 70 games at AAA this season. He was batting .283, 7 homers, 26 steals for Andrew Velasquez. Any interest?
He is real small.
Small dude.
He's a tiny little dude, even, you know, especially by Yankee standards at this point.
is he like little Nicky?
He's listed at like 5'9", 170, and it looks it looks like a generous 5'9".
he's littler than little Nicky.
Is he playing every day for the Yankees right now?
He has been recently.
With Gleyber Torres on the IL, yeah, he has.
Yeah, the stolen bases, you know, anybody who can steal that many bases is worth, you know, a look as long as they're, you know, playing.
It's a really cool story, too. That, I mean, if you watch any Yankee game, they talk about it nonstop, but he's actually from the Bronx and grew up a Yankee fan. So it's really cool. I went to the game on Friday and I actually noticed his height and weight. I'm like, oh, 5'9", 170. That's basically me. I can be a major league ball player. No, I can't. I obviously cannot do that. Last name here, I wanted to bring up Andy Ibanez with the Texas Rangers. 10 hits, 1 homer over his last 6 games. He's 2% rostered. He has first, second, and third base eligibility. This year in AAA, he was batting .352 with a .1058 OPS. Any interest in Andy Ibanez?
It would have to be a 15-team league at least. Or a, you know, AL only.
Sure. All right. Some other hitting standouts from this weekend. Salvador Perez had a double dong on Friday. He's now up to 32 home runs. Career season continues for him. Luke Voit said that he deserves to play as much as Anthony Rizzo, and he's proving why. 13 hits, 3 homers over his last 6 games. Jose Ramirez had a sock and a shoe in 2 straight games on Friday and Saturday. And in August, we know that when Ramirez gets hot, I mean, this guy can single-handedly carry your fantasy baseball team. In the month of August, he's batting .275, 7 homers, 5 steals, a .1016 OPS for Jose Ramirez. Yordan Alvarez has homered in 3 straight games. Wander Franco, 5 more hits this weekend in 32 second half games. He's batting .299, 4 homers, 8 doubles, 22 RBI, 27 runs scored over his last 32 games. That is awesome for Wander Franco. And I did just want to bring up Christian Yelich. Get your thoughts. Find out if we think he's coming around a little bit. I know last week Bellinger was hot and we spoke about him maybe coming around. And since then, he's basically cooled off again. But Christian Yelich, 3-for-5 with a double dong on Saturday, including a grand slam. And I noticed in the month of August, strikeout rate is down. The hard contact is back up. Any faith here in Christian Yelich down the stretch?
I have a lot more faith in him than Cody Bellinger at this point. I have for much of the season, because when you look at the underlying numbers for both of them, there's basically been nothing really good for Cody Bellinger all season. Whereas like Christian Yelich is still 94th percentile max exit velocity, 90th percentile hard hit rate, 74th percentile on average exit velocity. Like it was all not nearly where it was at his best to be certain. And, you know, the launch angle especially is, you know, more than half of what it was in 2019 or less than half. But yeah, he's still been hitting the ball incredibly hard. He's still been walking a ton. So I'm hopeful that Christian Yelich can keep this up, and I definitely have more confidence in him than someone like Cody Bellinger.
All right, let's see if he can keep it up here. Like Jose Ramirez and a lot of these hitters that we mentioned, he is someone that can carry your team if he gets hot in a hurry. So I think it's just a matter of him getting healthier from that back injury, which has been a huge problem for Yelich this year. But if he's getting healthy, then again, we could see some massive games here down the stretch. Let's take a quick break. When we return, let's rank some waiver wire starting pitchers, some streamers for the upcoming week, next on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's start with ranking waiver wire streamers part one. Brad Keller was at the Cubs this weekend. 6 innings, 2 runs. 8 strikeouts, he's 30% rostered, and he is at the Mariners this week. Jake Odorizzi had a nice start against the Mariners this weekend. 5 2/3, 1 run, 8 strikeouts. He is at the Texas Rangers this upcoming week. Patrick Corbin, you know, the Corbin's not very good, but he was awesome in this start against the Brewers. It was his first quality start since July 7th, by the way. 6 1/3, 1 run, 0 walks, 7 strikeouts. His sinker velocity was up to 94 miles per hour on average in this one. Slider velo was up about 2 miles per hour as well. Luis Patino turned in a quality start with 5 strikeouts. He is at the Baltimore Orioles. Corbin, by the way, is at the Marlins this week. And then Carlos Hernandez gave us a great start this weekend against the Cubs. 7 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts. And he is at the Mariners. So, Scott, how would you rank these streamers? Keller at the Mariners, Odorizzi at the Rangers, Patrick Corbin at the Marlins, Luis Patino at the Orioles, and Carlos Hernandez at the Mariners.
I would rank them Brad Keller number one. 6 of his last 8 now are quality starts, and the 2 that weren't, he was either dealing with a back issue or just coming back from it. I'll go Patino number 2. The Orioles have been especially bad lately. And then I guess I don't really like any of the others, to be honest. I might roll the dice on Corbin with the velocity being way up his last start, but obviously we've not seen him sustain that kind of velocity for any stretch of time. Really don't have faith in Carlos Hernandez. This was only his 3rd start this year with double-digit swinging strikes, and he was going against a AAA lineup. The Mariners are better than the Cubs, I would say, at this point. And that leaves us Jake Odorizzi bringing up the rear there. By the way, I want to point this out since I happened to look it up earlier today for Brad Keller, who I ranked number one here. You know, it's hard to tell exactly how any team's rotation is going to line up the rest of the way, especially this year. Royals currently have a 6-man rotation. I'm assuming it won't stay 6-man the rest of the way. And you could see Keller's remaining matchups going this way: Mariners, Indians, Orioles, Twins, Mariners again, Tigers, Twins again. All bottom feeders except the Mariners, who's, you know, they, you know, they're all, you know, the Mariners offense. You know the story with the Mariners. Yeah, you might throw no hit.
and I'll point out, like, this isn't just like a random hot streak. He threw his slider, I believe, a career high, like 49% of the time on his July 4th start against the Twins. And that's this 8-start stretch that he's on now. He's thrown the slider, I think, at least 40% of the time in every start in that stretch. He's got 50 strikeouts, 18 walks, and 48 and a third innings. So he's almost averaging, am I doing the math right? He's almost averaging 6.5 starts per inning, something like that. Yeah.
6.5 innings per start.
6.5 innings per start.
It's like 6.5 starts per inning. What? All right, Brad Keller up at the top there. Odorizzi, I will point out, at the Texas Rangers this week, but he has been much better at home in Minute Maid Park than he has been on the road. He's got an ERA over 5 on the road this season, does Jake Odorizzi. Let's rank waiver wire streamers part 2. These are all players that are rostered in under 40% of CBS leagues. So maybe you're looking at deeper leagues for these names. But Miles Michaelis, he was up against the Pittsburgh Pirates in his return on Friday. 5 innings, 2 runs, 0 earned, by the way, 5 strikeouts in that start. And he's at the Pirates again this upcoming week. Chris Bubich took a no-hitter into the 7th inning. He was at the Cubs and their AAA lineup. But 6 1/3, 1 hit, 2 runs, 9 strikeouts for Bubich in this start. He is at the Mariners this week. And then Jay Happ, who, look, I don't think Jay Happ is very good, but 6 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts, 4 starts with the Cardinals now. He's got a 1.99 ERA. He has had very favorable matchups. He faces the Pirates again this upcoming week. So, Chris, how would you rank this group of streamers? Michaelis at the Pirates, Bubich at the Mariners, Happ at the Pirates.
I think I would go Happ, Bubich, Michaelis.
What do you think, Scott?
I was not going to say that, actually. I was going to say Michaelis, Bubich, Happ.
Well, I feel very strongly about this.
Oh, man.
No.
I do want to mention Michaelis. The results were good, but you know, normally he's a ground ball pitcher. And in this start, he gave up 9 fly balls versus 3 ground balls. So I don't know. I don't know that he's totally back to form, but he's going against the Pirates.
So is Jay Happ.
Yeah. I'm pretty confident at this point Jay Happ's not good, like Frank was saying, regardless of how things have gone in his first 4 starts at the Cardinals.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. In those 4 starts, he has a swinging strike rate that is below 8%. League average is around 11%, and he has a 48% fly ball rate. So it doesn't really bode well, but man, the Pirates are really, really bad against left-handed pitching. I mean, they're bad against most people, but specifically against lefties. Who are you worried about most from this group? And I mentioned we've got to talk about Kevin Gausman. Last week, I brought that up. I think now is the time to do that. Over his last 7 starts, Kevin Gausman has a 5.17 ERA with a 1.69 whip. Yusei Kikuchi, over his last 8 starts, has a 6.69 ERA, 1.82 whip. Sean Manaea, his last 9 starts, a 5.52 ERA. And then Logan Gilbert, over his last 6, he's got an ERA over 8. So between Gausman, Manaea, Logan Gilbert, Kikuchi, Scott, who do you worry about most? And if you can, just kind of evaluate, like, what is going on with Kevin Gausman that you've seen?
Well, I am worried about all of them a little bit.
Yeah.
None of them have looked right. And in a way where it's not like the underlying numbers are all fine either. I would say the one who's, you know, you're to the point where you might drop him is Logan Gilbert, just because, I mean, at his best, he was the least useful of this group. So that makes it, that just makes it easy to do, right? But, you know, just in terms of how likely he is to get it back, if that's how you're going to interpret worried about the most, maybe Kikuchi. Because velocity's been down, the cutter usage has changed. I just don't, yeah. It just looks like It just, I could see maybe how he's lost it, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with like a really compelling explanation for it because his cutter's been his worst pitch this season and he's throwing it less over the last eight starts. It's actually coincided with a, you know, like a 10 to 15% drop consistently in his cutter usage. But the problem is his fastball's been getting hit really hard in that same stretch too. And he's mostly trading cutters for fastballs. So
yeah, I wonder if like
really a trade-off that's working out.
Right, like maybe the cutter keeps them off his fastball or something.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what, but, and even his slider in the month of August has gotten hit really, really hard too. So it's basically just been his changeup's been good so far, which that's not enough.
As for Gausman, I mean, it isn't just like, I wondered, okay, I know his starts haven't been long lately. Only once in the past seven has he gone six innings. But are they doing this because they're obviously going to the playoffs, the Giants, and they're just trying to preserve his innings after the very short season last year? But it's not just that, because he has a 5.17 ERA over that seven-start stretch. His swinging strike rate is about 12%, when his previous 18 starts, it was about 16%. So that's a big drop in swinging strike rate during the stretch too. Not that it's a horrible swinging strike rate, but it's certainly not the ace-like one we were seeing from him earlier, the dominant one. Some aces do have about a 12% strikeout rate. Yeah, I don't know. It's I don't really know what's wrong with him, but I don't think you can really give up on him either. He's too ensconced in your team's success at this point.
And it helps. And
I think it's worth noting, like, his ex-WOBA this month is actually right in the middle. So it's 302 right now. That's right in the middle for all of his months this season. He's had two better, two worse. So I don't know if if he's really pitching all that much worse, you know? It certainly seems like his control control/command aren't there, but I don't know if there's a good explanation for that or if that's just kind of the ebbs and flows of a season.
I think it's kind of the ebbs and flows of a predominant splitter pitcher as well, right? Like, we've seen that before where, Frankie Montas or even Kevin Gausman in the past they just kind of lose it for stretches of time because it is hard to command that splitter. So obviously that is his best pitch. The walks have been an issue for him here, but I think we're leaving him in the lineup right at the Mets this upcoming week.
Yeah.
And the splitter's actually remained a very, very good pitch this month. The ex-WOBA allowed is 224. The whiff rate's a little down, but not alarmingly so. Like, it's still 38%. It was 44% in July. So I don't know if there's really a good explanation here.
Well, how about for Kikuchi? Should we leave him in the lineup? He's up against the Royals this week. It's also a good matchup, so it's tough because he's been so bad.
It is a good matchup, but no, I just think the disaster potential is too high.
Yeah, I think he could be droppable.
Sean Manaea, too. I mentioned ERA over 5 over his last 9 starts. He's going up against the Yankees this week, who they're obviously pretty hot right now, and they've been very good against left-handed pitching, too, so... Would you bench Sean Manaea in that matchup?
Yes, I would bench him. You mentioned his last 9 starts, though, right?
Yes, 5.52 ERA.
Because really, really, it's just the 4 starts in August that have been awful. And then he had the last 2 before that were great. So I don't know that I'd go back that far to describe his struggles. Just I don't think it's quite as long as we've seen from Kikuchi or even Gausman.
All right, let's stick with some starter sit. And Sonny Gray had a great start this weekend up against the Marlins. Definitely helps. 7 shutout with 5 strikeouts. And it was his first time going at least 7 innings since July 7th. The problem is he's at the Milwaukee Brewers this upcoming week. And over the last 30 days, they are 5th in weighted on base average. Starter sit, Sonny Gray.
I would probably sit him. It kind of depends what else I have. I don't think he'd be the worst start in the world, but I'd try to sit him.
Yeah, he struggled last time he faced the Brewers in July, first game back from the All-Star break, 5 earned runs and 4 2/3. So I think it'd be okay to sit him. He's so inconsistent at this point.
I think more often than not, we're benching Blake Snell at this part of the season. 5 innings, 3 runs, 9 strikeouts over the weekend, and he's up against the Dodgers this upcoming week, but it's at home, and he's got a 2.68 ERA at home, and he's actually pitched very well against the Dodgers this year. So Blake Snell, starter sit.
I think the matchup decides it for you. He's fringy enough that's the case now. I mean, his last 4 starts have been pretty good. Only one of them's technically been quality, but that's kind of been the story for Blake Snell for the past few years now.
Yeah, I mean, even with that 2.68 ERA at home, it's under 5.5 innings per start. It comes with a 2.59 BABIP. Still right around 4 walks per 9. So I think there's still enough reasons to not want to rely on Blake Snell.
Hyunjin Ryu bounced back this weekend against the Tigers. 7 shutout with 5 strikeouts, including 15 swinging strikes on 105 pitches. Really, the past 2 months have been very inconsistent for Ryu, but a big issue for him has been the lack of swinging strikes. So it was nice to see that bounce back for him. The problem going up against the White Sox this week, tougher matchup than the Tigers. Would you start or sit Ryu there?
He's kind of in the sunny gray category for me, I guess. So, certainly not a priority to start him, but it's not the worst thing in the world if you have to.
This is the most Zach Gallen thing ever, right? So he's only started in 42% of CBS leagues this weekend, and he's at the Rockies, which, look, you shouldn't have been starting Zach Gallen there, obviously. 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts, right? It's just, that's the way these things go sometimes. It's very weird. Anyway, I noticed his fastball spin rate was up over 100, his cutter spin rate up over 220 RPM in that start. He's 79% rostered at the Phillies this week. What do we think about Zach Gallen?
I am not ready to start him yet, but I was encouraged by this. I still feel discouraged about Zach Gallen and still wonder if something's wrong with him still. Mm-hmm. He had the elbow issue earlier on, the ligament issue. But this start gave me some hope that maybe he'll be able to pull out of it without any surgical intervention.
Although I always feel like even when a pitcher pitches well in Coors Field, you can't learn anything about a pitcher pitching well or poorly at Coors Field. I think there's like a sense like, oh, wow, he pitched well at Coors Field. That's a good sign. But it's like, but it's so different than pitching anywhere else that it's like, whatever he did in this start that went well, would that work necessarily as well somewhere else against a different? It's like Coors Field is just kind of its own like vacuum of fantasy relevance.
Last one we have here, John Means Meh. A quality start against the Braves on Sunday with 5 strikeouts. Starter sit against the Tampa Bay Rays this upcoming week, which I believe he got hit hard He got hit very hard against them last time out.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you have to sit him. And, I like I said the last time we talked about him, I don't think he's like a lost cause or anything, but I just think he's going to be too inconsistent, particularly for the team he pitches for you to get much use out of him this season. And as I mentioned before, he's out of my top 60 now at starting pitcher.
His full season pace over his last 11 starts would be 56 home runs allowed.
That's not going to work.
18 in 56 innings over the last 11 starts. So that would be really bad.
Sheesh. Yeah. And that start is in Camden Yards. So
yeah, I don't think you can trust him there.
No, thanks. All right. Where should we add any of these starting pitchers? Let's quickly run through. Nestor Cortez was up against the Twins on Friday. 7 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts. He is 27% rostered. Do we need to add Nestor Cortez anywhere?
Yeah, I think you could triple that roster percentage almost. I would add him most everywhere at this point. 270 XERA. The XFIP is kind of high because he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts, but he's got a very deceptive delivery, so you could understand why there's weak contact.
Well, and it's not really even just deceptive. It's just all over the place. He's kind of got a little bit of like the early. I don't think Raisel Iglesias does this quite as much as he used to, but he would throw consistently from different arm slots. And Nestor Cortez really, like, you look at his release point, it's kind of just like a wave across like several feet.
Yes. If you enjoy watching crafty starting pitchers, that is the word I would use to describe Nestor Cortez. He changes up his arm slots. He changes up His pacing in terms of delivery, sometimes he quick pitches people and other times he stalls. He has like that Johnny Cueto thing going on. So it's not a great matchup this week at the Oakland A's, but he has pitched very, very well for the Yankees, as has Kyle Freeland for the Colorado Rockies. 7 innings, 2 runs, 10 strikeouts this weekend against the Diamondbacks. Over his last 11 starts, 2.53 ERA. Now, we can't get that production anymore. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep up anything close to this level, but he's at the Dodgers this upcoming week. He's only 22% rostered. Should we be adding Kyle Freeland anywhere?
Man, I don't think so. I know it's been a long run of success here. Still, I think it's 3 home runs allowed during that 11-start stretch for a fly ball pitcher. And granted, you could say Nestor Cortez has had good home run luck too, because he's a fly ball pitcher in a hitter's park. But I just, I think Nestor Cortez has enough weirdness going on that he might be able to get away with it. And I don't feel the same way about Freeland.
It's worth noting Kyle Freeland has had a full season like this before. That 2018 season when he had a 2.85 ERA over 202.1 innings. The problem for our purposes when it comes to projecting forward is his next season he had a 6.73 ERA. Obviously, there were injury issues there, but I think that kind of tells you, the value of buying into this good run. Like, against a good matchup on the road, maybe, but certainly not worth adding in a week when he has to face the Dodgers, so you know you can't use him anyway.
Yep. Last two names here, Tyler Alexander and Jordan Lyles. They each pitched 7 innings of 1-run ball this weekend. Do we need to add either anywhere?
I don't think either's very interesting, no.
All right. Much like Christian Yelich, it's been a weird season for Aaron Nola, where we've been waiting to see something, some sign of life. And he gave us that against the Padres. They left him in just a little bit too long, trying to give him that complete game. Winds up throwing 117 pitches, 8 2/3, 3 runs, 2 of those were earned, 11 strikeouts, gave up that game-tying homer to Jake Cronenworth on the last out of the game, what would have been the last out. And he changed things up a little bit here, threw the curveball and changeup a lot less, used his sinker more, the fastball velocity was up. Obviously, you know, I think we're starting him against the Diamondbacks this week, which is a pretty good matchup there. But how encouraged are you by this from Aaron Nola?
Very encouraged. I wish they took him out earlier, but but otherwise, I mean, it was a great start, and he's had great starts before this season, and the underlying numbers have looked great the whole time. So I still think he could be an ace for you down the stretch, and the start shows how that would be possible.
Yeah, the underlying numbers have looked good the whole time. That's the key here, is that it's not, you know, like that 2019 season we've talked about a lot where he just didn't pitch as well. Most of the things that we look at when we look for pitchers, were where they should be, more or less.
A few stud starting pitcher performances that I did want to point out quickly, and if you have anything to add on any, feel free. But Max Fried, a 4-hit shutout. Robbie Ray had 11 more strikeouts over 8 innings against the Tigers. Lucas Giolito, 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. He had 24 swinging strikes against the Tampa Bay Rays. And then Walker Buehler, 7 2/3, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. He has now gone 6+ innings in 24 of 25 starts, averaging 21 fantasy points per game as Walker Buehler. That is second among starting pitchers, behind only Jacob DeGrom. Fried, Robbie Ray, Giolito, Walker Buehler.
I pointed this out last time we talked about Fried, but it's worth pointing out again because now it's even better. Since those 3 starts in April, when his velocity was down and we soon learned he had an injury. What kind of injury was it? He had an injury of some kind. Since those 3 starts in April, Max Fried has a 2.67 ERA. That's compared to the 2.25 ERA he had last year that we all thought was highly unsustainable. I mean, 2.67 isn't 2.25, but the guy's looking more legit than we gave him credit for.
A couple other studs I wanted to mention. Sandy Alcantara. Apologies, Sandy, if you're listening. 7 innings, 2 runs, 11 strikeouts at the Reds. He has 7-inning quality starts in 4 of his last 5. Framber Valdez, 7 shutout with 6 strikeouts against the Mariners. Adam Wainwright, just keep facing the Pirates, man. Let's do it. 8 shutout with 9 strikeouts. On Sunday, he has gone 6+ innings in 14 of his last 15 starts. Kyle Gibson was at the Padres, 8 innings, 1 run, 3 strikeouts. And then we had just a great pitching duel on Sunday between Logan Webb and Frankie Montas. Webb, 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. We've talked about him a ton over the past couple of weeks. Looks like he's setting up to be a league winner. He's 90% rostered at this point, is Logan Webb. 6 straight quality starts. Frankie Montas, 7 shutout on the other side, 9 strikeouts, 21 swinging strikes against the Giants, a team that does not swing and miss all that much. And over his last 10 starts, 2.55 ERA for Montas, a near 17% swinging strike rate, which is the top, which is the best in all of baseball during that stretch. So that's dating back to like late June. So Montas, Webb, Gibson, Wainwright, Valdez, and Sandy. Chris, anything you'd like to add on that group?
I hope Frankie Montas keeps it up. It's never a given. And just, you know, to point out one, Sandy Alcantara,
Sorry.
The same thing.
Even the Marlins fans getting it wrong.
I'm pretty bad at pronouncing names in general. Looks like he's probably going to get to 200 innings pretty easily this season. And, that's going to give him 2 out of the last 3 with at least 197 with an ERA, you know, well south of 3.5 over the last 2 seasons now. So it's pretty good, even though he's not, you know, an ace.
Calls to the pen, some bullpen updates. We'll wrap up with these. Tampa Bay on Friday, JT Chargois came in for the save up 5-4. He gave up a solo home run to Tim Anderson. And then on Saturday, Colin McHugh recorded the final 5 outs for his first save of the season. Scott, do you have any read here on Tampa Bay?
Nope. I mean, McHugh's their best reliever, but I doubt this means he's the closer now.
We spoke about the Reds, complete mess there, and TJ Antone is expected back, which we also mentioned. On Friday for the Nationals, Kyle Finnegan got his 5th save. He's only 37% rostered. The Nationals probably not going to win that many games, but he is definitely the closer, so if you do need saves, he's out there. For the Royals on Saturday, Scott Barlow got his 8th save. He's 27% rostered.
2 in a row for him.
Yep.
And then 2 over the weekend.
And then for the Pirates on Saturday, David Bednar got his 1st save. He is 16% rostered. Scott, how would you rank those last 3 we just mentioned? Finnegan, Barlow, Bednar, if you need saves.
I mean, Bednar's the best pitcher, but probably on the worst team. And this was the first time they got a save opportunity since the trade deadline. So I'm going to say Finnegan, just because you know they're going to go with him. But I think he's probably the worst pitcher.
Go with the best pitcher.
Go with the best. Well, you're going with Bednar?
Yeah, just because like it's so hard to predict when and where save opportunities are going to go. Remember the Diamondbacks went something like 40 games without a save opportunity earlier this season. I may be exaggerating that, but I actually don't think so. I think it really was that long.
That sounds right.
And, you know, now they've kind of had just a normal bad team's amount of saves since then. So
the one problem with Bednar, not to extend the conversation forever, but he worked part of the 7th and 8th on Friday with Stratton following him in the 9th in a non-save chance. So I don't even know for sure that he's the closer for the Pirates, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. At least with Finnegan, we know. He is the guy. To stream or not to stream with Monday, Colby Allard at the Red Sox, Will Crow versus the Diamondbacks, Antonio Senzatella at the Cubs, Daniel Lynch at the Houston Astros, and Paul Blackburn versus the Mariners. Should we just say no?
That would be my preference, but that's usually not how this segment has worked this season.
That is true.
I do like Lynch as a 2-star pitcher this week, but the second matchup is much better than at Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and Houston,
Houston
just had a massive offensive weekend too. I don't know if I want to get in the way of the Astros right now. I'm going to say no. Let's just go with no for Monday. How about Tuesday? We have Justin Steele versus the Rockies, Eric Fetty at the Marlins, Dylan Bundy at the Orioles, revenge game, Eli Morgan versus the Rangers, and Tyler McGill versus the Giants, and Ranger Suarez versus the Rays.
This is a much better.
McGill's number one for me, even with the matchup against the Giants. I just think he's the best pitcher here.
McGill, yeah. I don't hate Eli Morgan. I don't think he's very good, but I think the Rangers are worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably say the same thing about Eric Fetty, but he's the one I like the least of the ones that we've mentioned. So
I might, Miguel and Suarez, I could say the same for both of them that I said for Lynch. I like them as two start pitchers this week, but the first matchup is the bad matchup.
Yeah.
So if you had to choose one, Scott, who would you go with?
Oh, I agree with Chris. It'd be Miguel. And I think I agree with you. Morgan would be my second choice.
All right. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.